You're listening to the Igniting Souls Show. At Igniting Souls Publishing Agency, we help authors, coaches, entrepreneurs, and speakers write, publish, and market their books the right way and turn them into 18 streams of income. We invite you to our annual Igniting Souls Conference. Learn more at IgnitingSoulsConference.com. This episode of the Igniting Souls Show is part of our Ignited Entrepreneur series, where we get to talk with business professionals around the world who are on fire in their entrepreneurial journey. I'm your host, Mike Dominey. Joining me today is Chad Willardson, the president and founder of Pacific Capital and the best-selling author of Stress-Free Money. Chad, it's an honor to be able to sit and speak with you for a little bit today. Thanks so much for sharing your time.
I appreciate you inviting me on. Happy to be here.
I love it. Well, we've got some fascinating things to cover today, Chad. I know you've been a friend of Igniting Souls for a while, and I know you've got some fantastic stories, so I do want to get into that. But I would like if you'd be willing to share a little bit about Pacific Capital, a little bit about what you and your business do, so we can get to know you and your business a little bit.
Sure. I appreciate all the work that Igniting Souls does for families and entrepreneurs worldwide. So it is a pleasure to be on this particular show. Pacific Capital. So we are a multi-family office that serves primarily entrepreneurs with all their financial needs. So our main mission is to help you enjoy life by removing your stress about money. We work for the entrepreneurial families because that's who we understand. That's basically my background. We're about to celebrate our 10-year anniversary, actually. So we've got a big celebration coming up, which is going to be a lot of fun. How did I get into this business? Well, I was very passionate about goals and personal development and improvement and strategy. It was something that always interested me. And so when I got my degree in economics, but I did internships at different investment companies, and I was just fascinated by the markets and by personal finance, and launched my career with Merrill Lynch Wealth Management, and I spent almost 9 years there, and then left Merrill Lynch, decided to become an entrepreneur and a certified fiduciary for clients, which has become a lot more important lately. People are looking for more independent advice. Not necessarily the conflicts of interest of working with a huge major bank or brokerage firm. And so that independence, that freedom, that entrepreneurial spirit was attractive to me and to my clients. And that's what I sought out to start as Pacific Capital. So here we are, we're growing. We have clients all over the world, but we're based in Southern California.
Love it. Well, congratulations on a 10-year anniversary. I know it's a huge milestone that not many are privileged to be able to share. So that's awesome. That's exciting.
Thank you.
Sounds like you really have a heart for freedom, for helping people find freedom and establishing plans to be able to reach that. And I think that's such a great way to serve entrepreneurs and their families. When did you first consider yourself to be an entrepreneur? Was this kind of always in your blood, or what's your experience there?
Interestingly enough, it wasn't. I was not one of those kids who had all these businesses, and I was always going to be my own business owner. It was never like that, actually. I almost feel like I was an entrepreneur by accident. When we had the global financial crisis and recession of 2008, 2009, it really changed my industry. Banks were being bought out and merged. The restrictive bureaucratic nature of the investment firms just really ramped up. It was more about protecting the bottom line of the banks than it was about serving the people. And I just felt like I was almost forced out because my passion was helping the people. And my passion was looking at their goals and what they need and want. And when that became a tug of war between what does my big company want me to do versus what do my clients need me to do, I felt like I was just at a crossroads and had to make a decision. And it was scary. I was 32 years old, wife and kids and a mortgage and very, very comfortable career. At that point, I was in the top 2% of 16,000 advisors in the country at Merrill Lynch. So I had no reasons to leave financially or career-wise, but it just felt like it wasn't the right fit for my future. And I didn't have that alignment of passion and goals with the big corporate industry at that point in time. And so I left, and I've learned as I've gone along, and you know, I've started other businesses. I've got a lot of other things going on now besides just Pacific Capital, but that entrepreneurship, I don't believe I'd never really exhibited it before in my life until I started this business. So a lot of our clients, you know, they were starting little businesses and lemonade stands and things like that when they were 8 years old, and they always were going to be this. And for me, it was a different path for sure.
Well, that's fascinating and really helpful. Thanks for that transparency there, because I think so often there are entrepreneurs who are maybe in a position like you were, where you just saw this need, you just saw this almost like an injustice. Something's just wrong. There's a problem here, and it's the people I care about aren't being treated as well as they should be, and that's what instigated for you your entrepreneurship. And I know there's got to be other entrepreneurs who feel like, well, I never started a business before. I hear about all these entrepreneurs, you know, this Ignited Entrepreneur series, like you said, more often than not, we've got people who, you know, had their paper routes when they were 11, you know, and never turned back. And so I think some entrepreneurs might feel like this is, maybe something's wrong with them. Maybe it's too outside the norm if they've not experienced that. They don't have it in their blood, so to speak.
I think it's very learnable. I think it's learnable. I think working with other people, collaborating, I always definitely had a lot of leadership experience. I was a leader. I was a captain of different sports teams. I was a leader in the volunteer, you know, causes I was a part of. But I just had never run or owned or started a business. It just wasn't my thing. And like you said, it instigated inside of me when I realized I don't like the direction that my industry is going. This is not why I got in the business. And so I felt almost like I have to, if I'm going to stay true to what my moral ethics are, I have to do this. And so I kind of stood at the edge of the diving board and looked down like, whoa, this is a high dive. I don't really jump off the high dive, but I have no other choice. And so I closed my eyes and I jumped. So
that's so good. Well, I mean, Chad, you are, by all accounts, a man of integrity, a man of character, and I'd love to hear more about. There's a story that you share about a time, a big breakthrough in clarity for you. Could you explain a little bit more about a time when you experienced such a breakthrough that took you and your business to the next level after having to make some tough decisions?
Yeah, you're talking about the Who Not How book story, right?
Yeah, in the book Who Not How by Dan Sullivan with Benjamin Hardy, your story gets featured there. It's a good book, worth the read. Definitely. And I was excited to see your name in there, and what a great story to share. If you could share with our people here, I'd love to hear a little bit more about that breakthrough moment.
Absolutely. So a peek inside our industry. I remember when I was at Merrill Lynch, they gave us a stat that on average, an advisor would bring in about $1.5 million of new assets to invest per year on average in our industry. And so, you know, if you bring in $20 million a year of new investment assets, that's a great year. Well, I had this opportunity a few years ago. I was referred a potential client who actually had more than $100 million. At that time, it would have been the biggest new client our firm had ever signed up. And it was very exciting to me, and it was a referral, so it wasn't something that I was even chasing down myself. And once I met him and had our first meeting, I realized this is going to be a very difficult client. He's not really someone that fits our mold. It doesn't fit the people that we work with. He had a lot of demands that were way outside the norm, and in my mind I just wrestled and said, you know what, this, I know he's going to be a difficult client, but he's the biggest client we've ever seen, and we can figure
you
it out.
You encounter that sometimes of like, I mean, there's going to be tough clients, right? You got to deal with that. That's part of doing business sometimes.
Totally. And if it was just a few exceptions and things like that, then I'm sure we could have made it work. But it got to the point where he was not just demanding and high maintenance in his pre-client interviews, but he was actually somewhat very, you know, condescending and demeaning, especially to the female staff on my team. And that really pushed me too far to think like, if I could do this and it'd be a major revenue source for the firm and we could try to adjust and I could take the brunt of his demands and things like that. But I thought about it over the weekend and I thought, what would be the impact on my team if I said yes to this client? And I wrestled with it. I almost couldn't sleep that Sunday night before coming back in Monday morning. And I just decided, you know what? We have to stand on principles and this client is not a fit. And so I told the client that politely, that I really appreciate him reaching out to me, but I just don't feel like we're the best fit. And I'm sure there are others out there that would be a better fit for him. And I think he was not only offended, but shocked, because he's not someone that gets told no or rejected very often.
Oh, sure.
And it wasn't the most pleasant ending. I stayed professional and polite, but what I did notice was the lift of unity and the lift of respect inside our firm, inside of our team, skyrocketed. Wow. And it was, you know, it was a moment. It was just like, okay, we can say no to new business even when it's astronomically big. And I'm happy to report that since then we've gotten a client or two that were bigger than him. So wow. It's kind of a cool validation that you don't have to bend your principles to get new business.
That's so good. What a great testimony to the importance of your core values, right? Like that's exactly. When and the acknowledgement that the core values aren't just for you and your employees and how to hire, but also what people you work with. I think
correct.
Entrepreneurs, I think it's easy to take the business that you can get, right? And not necessarily filter clients and potential clients through the core values, but you've found success in really filtering what clients you work with based on how they fit with your culture, your organization. And what I love, what you mentioned, the huge lift, morale boost,
yes, morale
that, that offers your team, which really is of much more value than anything a client will invest with you.
And that's the thing. At the time I thought, man, maybe I'm making a big mistake. Maybe I'm being too rigid.
Oh yeah.
I had doubts. I just thought, am I ever going to see a client this big? Like, what am I doing? What this could provide so many resources that I could then put back into my team members, and maybe I'm being just stingy or something with this client expectations, but it turned out to absolutely be the right move.
And I like what you mentioned earlier about trying to rationale. Maybe I could take on the brunt of his demands. Maybe I could be the front person for him and not subject, you know, my team members to him and try to take that on yourself.
Yep.
But recognizing that it was bigger than just you, the impact was greater than just if you were to take everything, it would still have a ripple effect on
exactly.
the organization and the culture. And man, I love that story. Thanks so much for sharing that. And I think there's so many great takeaways from that. So, Chad, what inspires you? I like to hear from entrepreneurs and hear how they get filled up. You know, it's so easy to pour out and like you said, like kind of take on the brunt of the tough stuff in the organization. Mm-hmm. And that is, it can be draining, right? What fills you up? What keeps you going and inspires you along the journey?
You summed that up well in the intro. I love to see people gain more freedom and reduce stress and really have their own breakthroughs. That's what I love to do. I love to help people go beyond what they think is possible in their comfort zone. And in our case, it's life planning and financial planning. And it sounds boring, but really I'm focused on the entrepreneur with goals, the family with needs, and looking to alleviate all the complexities of making money decisions. And so it gets me really excited when we can see someone come in and they've got worries and stresses and uncertainties. And as we work with them and go through our process, they come out of it with so much clarity and excitement for their own future that though I literally see that burden lifted from them, and they're just like, oh my gosh, I wish I would have gone through this process earlier. I can't believe how much better I feel. And it changes their life because they have that burden lifted, the stress, the uncertainty, the what ifs, and they have a trusted fiduciary team in their corner that's always going to be there for them. And it's, you know, to me, that's exciting. I love it.
I love that. That's a really good segue into what I want to talk to you about next. As I introduced you, you're the best-selling author of Stress Free Money. And that's your first book. And you actually have a second book on the way, September 14th, the release, 2021, the release of Smart Not Spoiled, which is teaching families, entrepreneurs, money skills for kids. Can you talk to us? We'd love to hear anything you'd like to share about stress-free money. I know a lot of the principles we've already touched on as well. Can we talk about a little bit of your work as an author in these areas?
Sure. So I'll start by saying I always wanted to write a book. It was probably the last 5 years. I had many clients talk about it when I would share stories or analogies, real life experiences, and people said, "Have you ever written a book? I'd love to have all of these different things in one place to reference back to." And I did not know how to get started. And so I just appreciate the opportunity to share that in working with great companies, obviously like yours, to have that that support network of professionals to show us how to do it. You know, so the first book, Stress Free Money, I talk about the obstacles, seven obstacles, and how to overcome them to obtain financial freedom. And these are across the gamut for someone, whether you're recently starting out your career outside of college, or you're a very wealthy, high income, experienced entrepreneur. The principles relate to you either way. And this next book coming out next month, Smart Not Spoiled, the subtitle is The Seven Money Skills Your Kids Must Learn Before Leaving the Nest. And really, I wanted to focus on how can we teach kids to be financially prepared to be successful adults? And it's such an important topic. I'm a father of five kids. My wife and I have been married 20 years, five kids. And it's so critical to really understand what we're passing on to the next generation. It's not just money, it's values and it's lessons. And so they observe you and they gain a lot of their money blueprints in their mind by how you use money and how you talk about it. And if we don't get intentional about that, we're sending a lot of messages that we may not really want to be sending to our kids. So, you know, on the back cover of the book, we talk about how 2/3 of parents in America believe that their children are spoiled. And so I say, you know, the entitlement, you know, their expectations, their smartphones, the toys, the cars, all the gaming systems and all these things, things that we may not have had as kids, they're expecting that. But is it their fault? Have they been taught how to be successful with money in the school system? Have they been taught by parents? And so my goal with Smart Not Spoiled is to give lots of ideas, real life activities, examples, stories, and principles that you can give a foundation to your kids and help them to be smart with money.
Fantastic. I love the idea of passing along not just money,
right,
but the values, the principles, the wisdom. And it's so easy, I think, to kind of fall into that stereotype of the kids of, you know, the well-off, well-to-do entrepreneur family, you know, and being labeled as spoiled, right? Because we label that the kid as that, right? Oh, they're just a spoiled kid. They're a brat. They're so entitled. But you're saying it's really not so much. It didn't start with a kid being spoiled.
That's right.
It started with a lack of parental guidance in the realm of how to manage your money.
Well, when you think about it, like I tell so many different stories in the book. I think that's what people will like. I gathered client stories, friend stories, teammate stories of just interactions with them and their kids about money on different topics. And I think that's probably the most fun part to read. But I share a story of when we were at Disneyland and at the end of the day with our kids, and we'd spent a bunch of money and we had treats and food and Disneyland, you know, it cost an arm and a leg. And at the end of the day, the balloon guy is walking by and he's got 25 Mickey Mouse balloons, and the day's already over. It's nighttime. We're going out to the tram to go home. And our kids are like, "Hey, can we each get a balloon?" And the balloons are probably $8 to $10 or even more per person. And I said, "No, we've already spent enough money for the day." And one of my younger kids points to the ATM machine by the main street and just says, "Just go get some more out of that machine. You know, it's a simple fix, right? Just go over there in the
machine.
Spits out money and get us some Mickey Mouse balloons." And it was like, ooh, I have not taught them that there is actually something that there's part of that transaction they're not really seeing, that there needs to be money in the account before you just go over to that little fancy magic machine and get some money. So they don't learn it in the school system. They don't learn a lot of personal finance in the school system. And unfortunately, they don't learn it very often in the home. And so my goal is to empower parents and kids to have a very relatable and easy and actionable guidebook with a bunch of ideas that can help them learn to be smart with money and not so spoiled.
And the ability to recognize those teaching opportunities when something that like that comes up, to not just kind of brush it off or laugh it off, but say, "Oh, this is a moment. All right, there's a gap here. Let's take this as a teaching moment." And I think that is so important. And I'm sure your readers will love hearing the stories. What's the age range of your kids right now? Like,
Good question. My youngest just turned 6, so we have a 6-year-old. 8-year-old, 11-year-old, 14-year-old, and my oldest will be 17 soon.
Wow. Love it. And also congratulations on the marriage of, you said 20?
20 years this year. Yeah. Years. Thank you.
Fantastic. Yeah. I love that. And I'm excited for the legacy that you're building, in your own family, and also not just for your clients, but the one that you're building right at home. And I think that's such a good, such a need in families and among entrepreneurial families. And I'm so glad to hear the success of you and your company. And I know these books are going to have a huge impact, man. That's so cool.
Appreciate it. I appreciate that.
Well, I've got a couple minutes here, left in our conversation. And in that time, if you were to boil down your experience, your advice, into about one word, if you can, for entrepreneurs to kind of sum up what the most important character trait, most important aspect is for them to help them stay the course and to find success in what they're doing. What is that word that you would encourage people with today?
Oh, to narrow it down to one is tough.
There's so many. Fire challenge here.
I know. Let me think. I believe one of the key words I would use for entrepreneurs would be perseverance. Regardless of the business that you're starting or the problem that you're solving for your own clients, you've got to be willing to have some grit and perseverance, because no matter what industry you're in, you're going to face challenges. There are going to be ups and downs. I remember leaving Merrill Lynch to start Pacific Capital, and I was working close to 18 hours a day. I had leases on the line. I had payroll. I was sometimes wondering, like, what am I doing? I was making a ton of money over there. I didn't have to worry about anything. I just showed up at work and it was all done for me. And here I am trying to start this business and basically starting over after 8.5 years.
Wow.
But the perseverance and the vision of seeing what it could be kept me going and kept me pushing and kept me fighting through the doubts or the hard times. And I believe that kind of perseverance that's something that I try to teach my kids, of course. And it's something that I believe all of us entrepreneurs need to keep in mind, that regardless of the ups and downs, you look at 2020 with COVID and all the different challenges we faced with business closures and work from home and different things that we never could have planned for. But the perseverance to continue and stick to your strategic plan and your vision and adapt to how you can best serve clients and how you can best take care of your employees, is that's been very key, at least in my own journey.
Perseverance is definitely a multifaceted strategy or aspect, really, where, like you said, the planning, the adapting that is required, the grit. There's a lot of aspects that go into a life of perseverance, and it's so important to really live that out so that you can weather the unknown. And
one of the phrases we have our kids repeat often is that I can do hard things. I can do hard things. Inevitably, you're going to have hard things happen, and it's those moments when you decide really what track, what trail you're going to take, what path is going to lead you forward. So it's got to be one of perseverance, because without that, there's going to be too many challenges that look like they're insurmountable, and you end up just going backwards or stalling, when really, if you had that perseverance attitude, you could fight through it, you could go around it, you'll figure out a way, but you'll get through it.
I love it. It's not just helpful for kids. I think we can all repeat that in the morning before we go to bed. I can do hard things. So we'll leave our listener friend today with that in mind. I can do hard things. You can do hard things. And I'm so appreciative of you, Chad, for your time here and sharing with our people your stories, your inspiration. And thanks so much for your time, man. It's been a fantastic conversation.
I really appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
All right. Well, man, this has been good. This has been another episode of the Ignited Entrepreneur Series. Many thanks to our special guest today, Chad Willardson, the president and founder of Pacific Capital and best-selling author of Stress-Free Money, and also author of Smart Not Spoiled, which will be available starting September 14th, 2021. Looking forward to that. And those links to getting in touch with Chad will be in the show notes as well. So this is Mike Domini. I'll see you next time. Stay ignited. Thanks for listening to the Igniting Souls Show. At Igniting Souls Publishing Agency, we help authors, coaches, entrepreneurs, and speakers write, publish, and market their books the right way and turn them into 18 streams of income. We invite you to our annual Igniting Souls Conference. Learn more at IgnitingSoulsConference.com.